Brandon Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. My name is Braden Gall, Julian Council producing. Where is Fitzy? Fitzy has very important things to do today. Just like Mayor Barry, for example, who, by the way, was on a very important phone call, which, by the way, for all of you people in Nashville, it's way more important that she handles those phone calls than she talks to us, just so you guys know. So she is a very busy lady right now, and we'll probably have to reschedule. We apologize. We were very much looking forward to that. But sometimes in live radio, these things happen, and from time to time, people get caught up and get booked and are very busy. And like I said, frankly, if you live in Nashville and she is your mayor, you kind of want her handling all these phone calls that come up instead of talking to a couple of yo-yos like Fitzy and I. So we do apologize. These things happen. Very, very sorry about that. Obviously, have a lot to talk about with her. The transit plan being unveiled next Tuesday, obviously very important for all of us. The vote coming up very soon for the soccer stadium, as well as really important stuff like closing down Broadway. Can we make that happen? That's just something that Fitzy and I really want to accomplish here on the show because we're focused on the important things for Nashville. He was going to ask me a question about Butch Jones, I believe, Julian. I think the question was, is there anything that
I'll ask you.
Oh,
Braden,
yes,
is
please.
There anything that happens tomorrow in the South Carolina game that could have Butch Jones no longer the coach come Monday morning or even Sunday morning for the University of Tennessee's yeah. football program?
Yeah, Sunday more likely if they were going to make a move, right? Like it would happen after the frat party on Saturday night.
Like right. We would know Sunday by noon Eastern.
I agree with that. And I do think the answer is probably yes. I think that's an easy question to answer. If Butch Jones, and again, it's how many times did we say this about Tennessee football? And really, this applies to everything. This applies to Coach O at LSU. This applies to Kevin Sumlin at Texas A&M. This applies to Jim McElwain at Florida right now. It applies to everybody. It's never really the number that you get to. It's how does it look and how do you get there? How does it feel? And with LSU, for example, and this is a perfect example for Tennessee fans to sort of pay attention to. With LSU and A&M, look at how they're playing right now today. Sure, they beat Florida LSU, but look at how LSU has gotten to its record right now. Completely destroyed by Mississippi State, just like Tennessee against Georgia. Completely listless against Troy, and you lose an inexcusable game to the Troy Trojans. I don't care if Neil Brown's a good coach and a rising star. That's inexcusable for LSU football.
By the way, Transitive Property says that my Elon Phoenix are better than LSU at football.
Tell everybody why.
I'm not really sure. I just saw it on Twitter,
plus
and I
B
believe
plus
it.
C plus D plus E plus
yeah,
F
and we would probably be
Elon.
Like J.
But basically, your third place in the SEC West. Your Elon Phoenix is third place in the
yeah, basically.
Okay, I'll take Mississippi State.
That's fine because at this point, there's three good teams and everyone else is not really good
in the SEC.
Yeah,
no, I agree with you on that. I think there's three great teams in the SEC. But the point is look at how LSU has gone through this process. Then look at Texas A&M. Texas A&M, sure, they start off with one of the worst chokes in the history of college football with a 30-plus point lead against UCLA. But they lose that game. But look at what they've done since then. It looks like a team that's sort of rallying around Kevin Sumlin. It looks like it's got some young talent. They look like they found a quarterback. They play well against Alabama. They are close to being undefeated before going into that Alabama game. How does Texas A&M, and it looks like that team is rallying around Kevin Sumlin. And so there's two very different looks, but they could have identical records at the end of the year, A&M and LSU. So it's how does it look? How do you get there? With Tennessee, there's no way you can argue that there's a positive look to the organization and to the team with how they play against Florida, even though you could spin the fourth quarter and second half and say, man, they played so well. But to blow the game the way they did in that situation is just unacceptable. And then you go, how do you play against UMass? Unacceptable. How do you play against Georgia? Completely unacceptable. So if they play like that, if there's another one of those moments where it's unacceptable, it's embarrassing, it is all the quarterback can't complete a pass, the offensive line won't bust a grape, the defensive line gets no pressure, they lose by more. I think it's 17 points. I think it's 14 to 17 points. If you lose by 14 or 17 points or more, I think that's the time you could look at Tennessee and say, Monday morning we wake up and we do this show, Fitzy and I and Julian, and it's previewing the Titans-Colts game and talking about who the next coach of Tennessee is going to be. If it's a bad-looking football game, that is where the Tennessee Volunteers could be making a move.
Well, Butch has already set himself up for failure tomorrow by making this swift quarterback change to Garantano. It feels just like 2013 after they got blown out by Oregon on the road. Pull Justin Worley, go on the road to Florida. It's like, hey, let's go ahead and throw Nathan Peterman out there, who played and looked like he had never played a game of football in his life.
He's now in the NFL.
Yeah, he's in the NFL now, but at that point, he was not ready to start a game.
It's the genius of Matt Canada.
And clearly, yeah, sure, whatever. And clearly, Jarrett Garantano's not ready to start a game, but I guess it's a last-ditch effort for Butch to save his job. And in that game, Peterman was quickly pulled in favor of Worley. I see basically the same thing happening tomorrow, where Garantano goes out there, looks exactly like he's looked all season long whenever he's played, and they're throwing Dormady back in there second half, and it's too late. You're already losing the South Carolina team that just blew out Arkansas.
There's a really good chance that all the things that you just said happen. The one difference I will say, or I guess it's two, the game situation itself is so, on the road against that Florida team versus at home against this South Carolina team, there's a lot more opportunity for success for the quarterback. That's the difference. That was an elite-level Florida defense on the road. This is a bad South Carolina defense at home. So there is more opportunity there for
Garantano
to be successful.
Well, the point is, he's making a change just to make a change. Just making it because they had a bad loss. They're coming off a bad loss.
I don't think it's making a change just to make a change. If you have a quarterback who is leading the SEC in turnovers and you bench him, that's pretty normal football.
Well,
101.
You've said this. What have we seen from Jarrett Garantano that offers you any confidence that he's going to go out there and
he's
perform better?
He's young. He's got upside, maybe. That's it. I mean, this is where we're at. I mean, there are no other cards in the hand to play at this point for Butch Jones. You're out of cards in the deck. Like, you have a young freshman quarterback that was a big-time recruit that everybody wanted, that you think has a lot of upside. He runs the football the way your offense wants out of the quarterback position. You've got two good running backs. This is it. This is the last opportunity to show. And again, if you're a Tennessee fan, regardless of who the coach is, you still want this move. Because Dormady, to me, shows that he's not the answer. We don't know if Garantano's the answer, but if you give him two or three games, maybe at least, even if it's some other coach next year, at least you've shown that this is the guy who can run the offense next year, because you've got Callaway, a sophomore. You've got Kelly, a sophomore. Richmond and Smith are underclassmen along the offensive line. You have legitimate players on offense that could be good next year if they find a quarterback that can steer the offense. So, spearhead? Or steer, one of the two. That's the key, is show signs of life. Show any promise of upside or development, if that's what can happen. And you can't learn that in one game, and that's the problem with Tennessee fans.
Well, we haven't even seen the two games he's played prior, so I think it'd be a little crazy to believe he would tomorrow. Tyron and Brentwood, go ahead.
Hey, guys, good to be with you again. Just a couple of things. On the Tennessee side, to me, and I'm not a Vol fan, but to me, I think the Volunteers – athletic director and everybody, I think they should be identifying their guy and be ready to make the move. Now, whenever you find your coach behind the scenes, and if you feel good about him and he's your guy, whether that's this week, whether that's next week, whenever, I've seen enough to know Butch Jones should have been, and I think it's a year late, just to be kind of frank, he should be gone. And if you're the Vols, if you got a guy in mind, if you've already started behind the scenes, the back channels of finding your coach, which I'm sure they have, I think whenever you identified and you pretty much know, let him go, because he's not going to be the coach that wins you the SEC East, that you can make a playoff run and contend for a national title with. That's just the bottom line, and I think the same could be said for LSU coach. I know we're in year 4-1 with him, but he's never done nothing. He's had chances at other places, and he never done nothing. Beating Florida does not do enough for me. You lost to Troy. I think you're going to get boat raced by Alabama and lose some other games going forward. To me, they should be – I get it by Les Miles last year, but if this is the best you could do, you might as well hang on to Les Miles. I mean, that's just the bottom line. On Sumlin, I'll say this. If he wins out, I say he saves his job, because I heard y'all think a day or two saying the quarterback's developed. You see some kind of positive signs. And, I mean, if he wins out, basically he had a debacle at UCLA. But to me, if he wins out, that makes up for that. And if we're going to fire coaches for losing Nick Saban, let's just fire everybody in America. So if Sumlin wins out, I think he saves his job. But Butch Jones should have been gone. And LSU coach, just get rid of that dumpster fire. He sucks.
Thank you, Tyron.
Well, I think Urban Meyer
and
Dabo get to keep their jobs. Yeah. And I agree. The thing about Kevin Sumlin, I feel like a lot of people, and I understand that whole game against UCLA seemed like a microcosm of his entire tenure there, starting off hot, then falling apart in the second half of the season. That in that game was the game. But I feel like people just kind of jumped to a rash conclusion that, like, he needed to go after that. Because it's one game, and I understand.
It's been 4 years of build-up.
It's a rough loss. But let the season play out at least.
I love the fact that his team looks like it's rallying around him. It looks like they're fighting for him. And I give a lot of credit to something like that. It's how you look. And
it's not like they ever quit.
They played a hard game against Bama. That was a tough game, and they played a hard – and to Tyrone's point, like, if we're just going to fire everybody that loses to Saban, no one's going to be coaching. But Coach O is different to me and with LSU. And I'll tell you this right now, Auburn is going to stomp them. Auburn is going to go down to Baton Rouge this weekend, and Auburn is going to embarrass them. And that's the exact thing we're talking about here. It's how does it look on the field? Are you competitive? There's no reason for LSU to go into Starkville and lose by 30. That is not what LSU does. Coach O was 3-21 at Ole Miss for a reason. I love Coach O. I'm rooting for him. He's just not the guy for the job. And what you don't want if you're a Tennessee fan is for anything to play out like LSU played out. That's the worst, or even the way some of the A&M stuff has played out, which is even worse when you look at what boosters and how boosters have treated Kevin Sumlin, which is just ridiculous. So this is all about maintaining control behind closed doors for John Curry. And the bottom line is you lose badly this weekend, Tennessee, we're talking about a coach, I think, on Monday. So we'll continue to take your calls. Weston Franklin, you'll be first up. What is Butch Jones where's the score have to be this weekend for you to make a move on Butch Jones? And a lot of people have already made a decision. We'll do that when we come back. Braden Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Braden Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hal Gill going to join us coming up in about 15 minutes. We got some gambling advice for you next hour, entertainment purposes only, obviously. And then, of course, Jordan Rogers is going to join us as well. However, we're talking Butch. We're talking South Carolina game. What has to happen this weekend for them to make a move? Obviously, a lot of fans already off the Butch bandwagon as it is. But Wes and Franklin, always a pleasure to hear from you. Wes, how you doing, man?
Hey, guys, good morning. You know, a lot of people, and I've heard Jimmy Hines say this, they like to use the LSU example as a reason not to make a midseason coaching change. And, you know, that was not the problem. The problem was not that you fired Les Miles three games in. The problem was the hiring of Ed Orgeron, not just hiring him, but giving him, you know, as I think I heard somebody say, giving him a buyout of like $12 million when you could have had him for a case of Red Bull and a couple of bowls of gumbo. That's the issue with
some
LSU.
Some pork rinds?
yeah. Maybe
no, and Wes, you make a good point. To me, it's not even about the fact that they fired Les Miles. I totally agree with you. It's how they handled it the year before, where they let the media and the fans make all the decisions for them, and then they let emotion get into it, and they kept him around the extra year. And I agree with you. It's also the hiring of Ed O. None of it was firing Les Miles in the middle of the season. None of that was the issue.
Right. And, you know, but you were talking about Tennessee and what they have to do this weekend, and you pointed to the fact that it's going to be a little bit easier, you know, than it would be for a quarterback at playing on the road at Florida. But let's not forget, this is a team that couldn't muster any more than 17 points against UMass at home and 0 points in the second half. I just think there's so many more problems than just quarterback. There's problems with receivers. The O-line has looked terrible,
yep. As
it has for the last few years. I just don't see this team winning this weekend. I don't, you know, I think if he loses by 1 point, I think he's probably gone. I don't see any way he survives this season. I think if they eke out a win, I think it could, you know, maybe have it even after the Bama game in a couple of weeks, you know, assuming that's the blowout everybody's going to, you know, think it's going to be. Thanks, guys. Have a good weekend.
Yeah, thanks, Wes. And I would not be shocked if he loses South Carolina at home. You know, would I be shocked if they made a move, even if it was a close game? No. Listen, there's nothing that would shock me at this point in the SEC. This is coaching carousel hot seat discussion talk in the most rabid conference in America. Like, literally nothing surprises me. This is a conference where we subpoenaed a coach coming to media days. Like, this is what happens in the SEC. That's what makes this league more entertaining than any other conferences, because people are insane. Zach in Hendersonville. What's up, Zach? Zach, what's up?
Hey, sorry. So I need to preface this first by saying that I'm an LSU fan, so I want to comment on the Ed Orgeron talk that's going on. So he's obviously he's had a chance before. He didn't do well with it, and he's not looking so hot right now. But I think it's bigger than that, because we don't look good on defense. We don't look good, terrible on offense. We have arguably two of the better coordinators in the country. I don't think overnight they just forgot how to coach. We have a really young team, and I think the biggest issue is Coach O took the physicality out of practice that Les Miles had. and you can tell the guys just aren't as physical. They're young. I think he needs probably at least give him this year. You know, next year if this happens again, he's got to go. You can't, you know, a program like that, you can't have this going on for more than 2 years. The big problem, though, is Joe Oliva. He's got to go. That's the issue with LSU. We've become like a national joke the past 2 years, and I blame our athletic director.
Zach, I appreciate the call, man. I totally agree. I totally agree with that. I sat across the table from him and talked to him this was like two preseasons ago, and the whole entire athletic department was strange and weird and bizarre. Les Miles was weird and bizarre. This is before the Cam Cameron news came out that he had been battling cancer. The whole thing was just the weirdest experience I'd ever had in my entire life, and I think it starts with Joe Oliva, and that led eventually to the whole weird end of the season thing with Les Miles and how they handled it. I will disagree with you on one thing, Zach. You do not have two of the best coordinators in America, okay? You just don't. You have Dave Aranda, who's a great defensive coordinator, and then you have Matt Canada, who got fired from NC State for being average with Jacoby Brissett, okay? This love for Matt Canada and paying him seven figures is beyond comprehension to me.
It's so SEC because it just means more
it's
overpay a coordinator who clearly isn't that great.
It's absurd. By the way, we're bringing you the best coverage with our premier college football preview show Saturday. Tailgate, join Jared Stillman and Julian Council at Mafiosos in Franklin. You think you're going to talk about LSU Auburn at all tomorrow, you think? Or Tennessee Butch Jones?
We'll talk a lot about Tennessee and Butch Jones. I'm sure Jared has a scalding hot take for me about Butch.
Do you have to routinely like pour cold water on his hot takes?
No, I just let him say what he's got to say.
Just let him go. Every Saturday from 10 a.m. till noon, only on ESPN 102.5 The Game, live from Mafiosos in Franklin. So go check that out. Of course, I know you will. Tomorrow morning, a big weekend in the SEC as well. I'm fascinated by the Auburn LSU game because I think LSU fans are just as fired up about their coach as Tennessee fans are about theirs, and Kevin Sumlin is about, and A&M fans are about Kevin Sumlin. I think there's reason for optimism for Kevin Sumlin, which I never thought I was going to be saying in this conversation. I think there's no optimism for Butch Jones. I think it's too early for no optimism with Ed O, but I thought that when they hired him. So to me, at LSU, I don't see a light at the end of the tunnel for you guys. I don't see a light at the end of the tunnel for Tennessee. If Texas A&M goes on the road and beats the Gators in those hideous uniforms this weekend, there's a lot of reason for optimism for Kevin Sumlin, which is not something I anticipated saying at the beginning of the season. I'm a little surprised by how that team has rallied from the first weekend. And Kellen Mond has really looked like a nice player, man. He does. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens. The Gators' defense is the problem right now. It's not the offense is obviously an issue, but the defense is not what it was last year for your beloved Florida Gators, Julian Council.
I certainly wouldn't blame the defense in all of this because the offense has been awful. It's one of the worst in Division I.
38 points on Vandy. No problem there.
That's Vanderbilt. I'm sorry. I understand Vanderbilt's a better program now, but it's still Vanderbilt. So Florida should score 38 points on Vanderbilt. That shouldn't be like a thing where we're pointing out, oh, hey, Florida's offense isn't that bad. It scored 30 on Vanderbilt. Yes,
well,
that's what they should be doing.
What I mean by the issue is the defense is that the defense carried them when the offense has – I mean, the offense has been bad since Percy Harvin and Tim Tebow left, but the defense has carried them to a lot of wins and to two straight division championships. The defense isn't that good, as good this year, and that's the problem.
It's not that they're not as good as they just have less experience than they've had the last couple of years. They still have talent. It's just these guys haven't been around.
And that's LSU's problem on defense. They're just very inexperienced. And so this is the world we live in as the SEC coaching carousel turns. It's just you have no idea what to expect from week to week. Basically, unless your name is Saban, Mullen, maybe Derek Mason, with the exception of those three, you are a 3 or 4 game losing streak away from being on the hot seat. I mean, Gus Malzahn in Auburn is rocking and rolling right now, and he was on the hot seat just 18 months ago. Kirby Smart was a big question mark this summer, right? Like, oh, could Georgia be that good under Kirby Smart? He went 7-5 last year. He's not that good. Now they're the top 5 team in the nation, and they're rolling. Like, this conference is what makes this league so entertaining. It's just so ridiculously up and down. Left and right, and it happens on a dime. Like, it just moves and swivels. Hal Gill going to join us coming up in just a second, but Jermaine in Nashville. Jermaine, what's up, man?
You know what, man? I was just listening to you. First of all, good morning.
Morning.
I was just listening to y'all, man, and this whole Kevin Sumlin thing, and it been having me all up in arms ever since, you know, everybody was writing him off. I won't be surprised if he pull a what was a Tennessee basketball coach, Konzo?
Yeah, Konzo Martin.
You remember the first, you know, that he was doing hideous and horrible, and he went on that run, and he was like, see you at the end of the season. I do feel like the LSU job is, you know, is gone. you know, I think Coach O will be fired. I think Coach Butch Jones will be fired. And I think Kevin Sumlin will look at, you know, something on the net. So I think all three coaches are going to be gone by the end of the season.
Man, that's pretty bold, Jermaine. Thanks for the call. I don't think LSU moves on Coach O, because what it does is it unless they fire the athletic director first, what they're doing then is the athletic director saying, hey, my bad, I screwed up totally. He basically signs his death warrant at that point if he fires that Orgeron. So I don't think LSU makes a move like that. It would be interesting to see if – because Kevin Sumlin was on a lot of NFL radars for a while there, but he started out so hot with Johnny Manziel and then has kind of fallen back to 8-5 and has just kind of sat there. But, again, to me it's all about how it looks, and there's some growth and some progress in that organization right now. So college football, very, very interesting every single weekend in the SEC, and it's all about the coaches. The reason they're not as good as they used to be, it's about the coaches. So we'll move on from college football for just a second. Hal Gill going to join us. Talk a little Preds. They got a big one coming up this weekend against Chicago. Saturday night coverage right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, and also the win over the Stars last night. The most complete performance of the season for the Preds. We'll talk with the great Hal Gill when we come back. Brandon Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Brandon Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Preds win last night over the Dallas Stars. First game in the division, first game in the Western Conference, and they handle business not with relative ease, but a good quality win, probably the best performance overall. And of course, obviously the big game against Chicago coming up on Saturday evening. ESPN 102.5 The Game is your flagship station for the reigning Western Conference champions, and we hang banners for it and don't apologize. The Nashville Predators, follow us on Instagram, Pittsburgh, and Twitter, and like us on Facebook to keep up with all things Smashville. Twitter at 102.5 The Game, Instagram at The Game Nashville, Facebook .com/TheGameNashville. Hal Gill joining us here. Of course, you can hear him every team broadcast there again Saturday night against the Chicago Blackhawks in the United Center. Hal, thank you for joining us, my friend. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing great, man. Just having my coffee and excited to talk more hockey because we got Chicago coming up.
Well, let me ask you a question first. You played 16 very distinguished seasons in the NHL. I believe you made the playoffs 7 times. You had a great career. I'm a big fan of yours. How many seasons – now, here's the but. How many seasons – Sam Girard scored his first goal last night. How many seasons did you play in the NHL out of those 16 that you did not score as many goals as Sam Girard has now scored in 2 games?
Are you going to ask me how many goals – how many times I got blanked?
or had one.
It's not. Hey, I know the kid makes it look easy scoring goals, but it's not that easy. You know? I that wasn't my thing, you know. I didn't like taking all that glory. I wanted my teammates to get all the glory, you know. I was a good teammate like that.
The answer is 5. Sam Girard has matched your scoring total for 5 of your 16 seasons. Just if you wanted
to know. That's how good he is. Impressive, huh?
No, I mean, really, and listen, I kid with you, obviously, but Sam is, he's a guy that's, the talent is just so obvious. He's starting to make the Predators' decision a lot tougher, is he not?
I think so. When you get into a game, and I don't think, when we were looking at him in the beginning of the season, I don't think we were looking at a booming shot as one of his attributes, but, you know, he used it twice last night, one for a goal and one to force the goalie into a bad rebound that resulted in a Forsberg goal. So that's 2 times that a shot became a weapon, and that's not even one of his, you know, I guess obviously the coaches knew about it, but I don't think we really saw it, the big, heavy shot that he has. So he's doing everything right. He was much more poised last night than he was the first game, and I assume it's just going to get – he's going to just keep developing more and more as he plays. So, he's a tough guy to leave out of your lineup right now.
You look at the performance yesterday, Pekka Rinne playing very well. Offensively, they get going. Defensively, they play relatively well as well. The most complete performance of the season. What was the difference last night in your mind versus the first 3 games?
Well, the first period was a stinker, I thought. I think Laviolette referred to it as the puck was bouncing everywhere, but the execution wasn't there in the first period. After that, it came out, and the beginning of that second period, they got a goal, they got a fight, they got everything going their way, and then another goal. It was exactly how the Predators want to play. They got into the zone. They had smooth entries into the zone, and they established a forecheck. They did all the things that they wanted to do in the offensive zone, such as, you know, you saw a lot more high cycles. The D were activating. Ekholm was all over the ice. Gerard was all over the ice. So I think that's what, you know, when Laviolette talks about an identity, that's what their identity is. And you saw that for two periods. And it's tough to play against when those guys are clicking and moving. And that's the first complete two periods, I thought. I don't think it was perfect, but I think it's, as close as we've seen to what the Predators can be this year in those last two periods. I'm leaving out that first period just because it was a little sloppy.
Hal Gill joining us here, talking Nashville Predators, and obviously a game against Chicago coming up Saturday night. Coverage right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. I think what's interesting, Philip Forsberg is starting to show people all the things that kind of we've all thought were possible with him. It took him a long time to get going the last couple of years as far as scoring goes. That's certainly not the case this year. Is he doing something different this year to get off to this hot start?
Yeah, it's funny how everyone, we talked about it a bit last night, everyone, you know, talks about a slow start, and sometimes that's just, I think goal scorers, listen to me talk like I know about goal scorers, but sometimes goal scorers, it just doesn't go their way. They do all the right things, and it isn't clicking for whatever reason. And I don't worry about guys that can score goals. I worry about them getting their chances. And if they're getting, you know, Philip Forsberg, his shot is so good. If he gets his chances, they're going to go in. It's just a matter of time. And it took a while last year, and I think this year, you know, maybe there's a little more confidence there, a little more calm in his game that he can go out and just play his game. And, you know, like the goal he had last night was a rebound that went right to him because he was in the right spot. And when he gets a chance like that, he's going to bury it. So I don't think it's something that you necessarily worry about with Peter Forsberg. They call him Peter.
Yep.
With Philip Forsberg. I just think it's something that's going to come, and he's such an elite level talent. I don't see many teams that are going to keep him off the score sheet, and I think it's an exciting year for him because he looks really comfortable in the game.
You know, we still got 77 games left to go or whatever, and so I'm not sure you could put too much gravity or weight onto one game, but you have to think Chicago is going to be very angry about how the end of last season ended for them, and they're at home, and this strikes me as an opportunity for the Predators to make a really big early season statement, as much as you can in Game 5. How difficult a job is that going to be, and how big a statement would that be if the Preds come away with a win in the United Center?
Yeah, the NHL is so close right now. All the teams are, you know, it's such a tight league that every game becomes a statement at some point, but this game, definitely, you know, you look at the way that Chicago has played and come out, the determination from Taves, you know, I think they were bitter, obviously, about the playoff exit last year. And now they get a chance at home, like you said, at home against the Preds. I'm sure they're ready to play. I'm sure they marked this on their calendar as they're going to look at it as a – and isn't that a different way of looking at it? They're going to look at it at this game as a bar, as opposed to the Preds always looking at is where do you set yourself and where do you stand in the NHL. So teams are looking at the Preds now, and, of course, you always have respect for Chicago and what they can do, and this year they're doing it really well. So it should make for a – I think it's going to be a high-energy game. I think it's going to be fast. Like you said, if the Preds can make a statement with this, it's a good way to set up the beginning of your season. You know, after the two losses, then you get two big wins, and then to go into Chicago and win would be a huge statement.
Hal, always a pleasure, man. Love talking with you. I'm going to keep adding goals to your ledger, buddy.
Please do, please.
Thanks, man. We'll be listening, dude.
Thank you. Have a good one, guys.
Absolutely. Hal Gill there on the broadcast, of course, with the great Pete Weber coming up Saturday evening against the Chicago Blackhawks. I think the Preds are playing with some house money, though. So I'll explain what that means when we come back. We've got a special in-studio guest as well. So don't go anywhere. Braden and Fitz, ESPN. Braden Gall here on Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. It's called Hitting the Post. Julian Council producing. Special guest Chase McCabe, Maccababe, the Chas Macabre in studio, hanging out.
How did Julian know that was my favorite song, or one of my favorite songs?
Because it's the most overplayed song in the history of music.
No, that would be Freebird.
Easy to guess.
That's Simple Man.
Okay, that's true. It's better than Freebird. You're right. Well, I like that smell. Anyway.
bet you do.
By the way, Honky Tonk Hat Trick is back. You guys know how tough it is to get Predators tickets right now. It really is difficult, and the guys at Tootsie's, Rippies, and Honky Tonk Central want to help you guys out. The whole thing brought to you by Bud Light. You can stop by any of these locations before Predators weekday home games for specials on Bud Light. But also, while you're there, you got a chance to win two tickets to the following weekday home game. So you guys know how hard it is to get tickets right now to Preds games. If you're already going to the game, stop by one of the three locations, Tootsie's, Rippies, or Honky Tonk Central. You can also register to win the VIP hockey experience, which is a pair of tickets to an upcoming game, dinner for two, and a ride on the Zamboni as well during intermission. I'll be down there for a lot of these, so come down and hang out. Again, it probably really is the easiest way to win tickets to a Predators game these days, because these tickets are hot and difficult to come by. Here, Braden Fitz on ESPN 102.5 The Game from the Game Nashville Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. Mount Juliet. Chase, let me ask you this. I think the Preds are sort of playing with house money this weekend. They're 2-2. They got back even, so they kind of eliminated the first two.
Right.
There's a long way to go. There's 77 more games after this one. I think Chicago is extremely upset about the way things went down last season. And I feel like if there's any possible – like, I feel like Chicago's going to win the game. I feel like Chicago is playing better hockey right now, and I feel like Chicago is angrier and they're at home. If the Predators accomplish anything, I feel like it's all house money. Am I totally wrong on this?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. But the thing is, I think the Preds know that. Like, when I talked to Ryan Johansson last night, that was the last question I asked him, was about going back to Chicago for the first time since the playoffs and what they were expecting. And, I mean, he pretty much said it. He goes, look, they're off to a hot start, but we know they're not happy about how we handled things last year and how we swept them. And so they're expecting it. So that's where I agree with you, that it is house money, that they can go in there and take one. But
like, if they get a point, let's have a parade.
Right. Well, let's not do that.
Okay,
but
that would be overreacting.
But I actually think, look, I think the Predators have proven that they know how to play the Blackhawks and they know how to win in that building. So, you know, I think it's going to be a competitive game. I don't know the result, obviously, but I think it's going to be a competitive game tomorrow night.
So, and part of that answer, and you talked about it with Ryan Johansson earlier, we also heard Hal Gill say it as well, that other teams now view this team differently. Other teams now look at Nashville
right.
as a threat.
They're not little brother anymore.
Right, like they're the bigger threat. And certainly, it's hard not to eliminate the emotion of being swept in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Or the way that Anaheim is different because there's a little bit more history there on both sides, since they had eliminated Anaheim the year before, and then again St. Louis, they never even played in a playoff series.
Right.
So now there's some animosity there, which is fun. I think that's good because A, it's the closest team in the division to you physically. Like, it's just down the road. You can drive to it. And I'd like to see that rivalry build. I think that's a good thing for the division and a good thing for the sport. But this whole Pittsburgh thing is a little goofy to me. So this Pittsburgh guy, this writer, this blogger writes this, and he's on the radio, I guess, up there too, and he basically put up photos of our celebration on Tuesday and said, hey, way to celebrate second place, man. Now, I'm not going to stoop to his level by insulting his city and calling out his city, because listen, they've got cups, they've got championships, you go party, you go celebrate, and frankly, I don't really want to tell another city what to do because I don't want another city to tell us what to do.
Right.
So I'm not going to stoop to their level here, Chase, but what is wrong about hanging a conference championship banner? Teams that don't make it to the NCAA championship game in college basketball, that finish third and fourth, hang Final Four banners every single year. South Carolina's hanging a banner, and they should. They deserve
it.
What is the problem with celebrating the first ever banner in franchise history? Why is it that Pittsburgh is so angry at us right now?
I'm going to pull one out of the page of LeVar Ball, and I know this scares you a little bit, but hey, bro, stay in your lane. Because this has nothing to do with you. Let us do our thing here in Nashville. Yes, they should hang a banner to celebrate the Western Conference championship. It's a championship. There's a trophy.
This is as angry as Chase McCabe ever.
Yes, I get tired of these people that just think they gotta talk about all this stuff and stir the pot even more. You guys won. Congratulations. You
they
won the
have,
Stanley Cup.
They have, we checked. Fitzy and I both checked. There's pictures in the building. There's an 07-08 Eastern Conference championship banner hanging in their
they
building.
They do it too.
I don't understand.
I don't.
Do they have like? But do they do the same thing that happened on Tuesday?
Do they have like a ceremony for it?
Yeah,
I don't know.
And I don't know either. But like to that, I would
think
still.
I think that's what they're. I don't know. I mean, I'm not on either side. I don't really care.
You were there Tuesday, right?
Yeah, I was there Tuesday.
I mean, we're talking about what eight minutes of two guys standing on the ice in suits. Like that was the whole celebration. Mike Fisher and Roman Josi standing there pulling down a curtain, and then the thing
but
goes
it was
up. That was it. It wasn't
I'm sure.
Like
I guess in Pittsburgh, whenever they go to a Stanley Cup or have something like that, they don't have a huge ceremony unless they win.
Right. Well,
that's probably
that's
the only
fine,
thing the guy's
this
trying
was the
to say.
First time. It's the first time they've ever hung a banner in that arena.
Don't allow yourself to get trolled by them.
Yeah,
like,
that's what
like,
I'm
who
saying.
Who cares? Like, so what? They got the cup.
I know.
I mean, just... I had when I posted that on Snapchat, I had several Penguins fans I know like text me and be like, "Nice banner, loser." I was like, "Cool. All right, dude. Like, it doesn't really hurt my feelings."
Like, what is it? What kind of joy are they getting out of?
I had
life?
A Bruins fan also like say, "You guys know you didn't win anything, right?" I was like. Look, man, it's not my idea to put a banner up there and celebrate, but it's obviously something to be celebrated.
It's what everybody,
but
they did win something. That's where like it.
No, I agree.
Well,
with you.
In, well, in cities like Boston and Pittsburgh, they won Stanley Cups before,
whatever.
So they kind of
they
look
always
down.
Think they're
that,
better
and,
than everybody else.
But
anyway.
Here's the deal: like that's fine. If you don't want, like, if you want your game atmosphere to be boring, then fine. That's up to you to do that. Like, I'm not going to tell you how to celebrate your team or tell you what to do.
See,
or
and then, well, the thing is, like, we. Don't fire back at them because when you say it's boring, then they're like, well,
I know, I took a
whatever,
shot.
We have five Stanley Cups, so in your face.
And that's fine. I would still rather have no Stanley Cups than party in Nashville because it's not Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
No, listen, that's
you
me.
You got me fired up.
That's
but
me.
You,
but that's
you
me,
got me going.
That, Julian's right. That's us stooping. Like, don't take the bait.
Because you can't really, right? And also if you stoop, you can't win this
no.
battle.
No.
Because at,
oh, no,
the
no,
day,
we,
it's
we,
about trophies, and if you don't have any – like a Stanley Cup trophy, you're not going to win that battle of saying, well, at least we have a better atmosphere.
See, and that's the difference. This is where you, both sides can win on this.
Okay.
For Pittsburgh, they can go, yeah, we got trophies, and you win. You don't need to troll us for hanging a banner and celebrating it because you got the cup, right? So just don't even – you don't have to stoop to that level. You can just be like – what it's and us – we can say, yeah, but we live in Nashville.
Yeah.
So, like, we win because we live in Nashville,
but
too. Everybody wins. We can all have it both ways, and we can all do whatever it is we want to do and have a good time about it. I think it all stems from the way the series was covered. That's all it was. This is not about winning the cup or not winning the cup. It's not about trophies or not trophies. It's not about we think Nashville's a cooler place to live or whatever. It's not about any of that. It's about the national media picked up on little old Nashville and had a great time covering it. We did something we'd never done before because it was new to us, and we did it a little bit bigger and badder than almost anybody else just in, like, that moment. It's not like it's going to always be like that. And they were like, why aren't you celebrating our city and our team? We're actually better, and they are better. They got the cup to prove it. But to me, it all comes down to how the team and the series was covered, and that is why they still won't let it go. Oh, they're piping in sound, and like they're making up stuff that they don't have to because they don't need to stoop because they have the cup. Just be like, rings, dude, and they win the argument. Like, they don't have to do this, and they're choosing to, and I think it all stems from jealousy about how the world perceived one half of the Stanley Cup final and not the other half.
Well, and I see what you're saying, and I agree with you, but – it's kind of like, you know, Chicago fans after they got swept still being like, yeah, well, we got three cups, actually have six, but you don't remember those. But
yeah,
because
you guys
you
were
jumped
bad,
on the bandwagon.
Yeah,
when they
you were
a
bad
winning.
Organization for 30 years.
Right, but it's like that. And it's the thing that annoys me, all these teams, all these fans that have a lot of success, they still want to pick on the people that that don't or are just experiencing it for the first time. Just let them have their moment. Let them have their moment.
No, I agree, and it's why I can't get on board with the, oh, but this Yankees team is fun to root for. I can't do it. And obviously I'm a Mets
no
fan.
No Yankees
so
team. Sorry, Cliff, but no Yankees team is fun to root for.
As a Mets fan, I'm tortured by the Yankees. And I like, even though I love D.D. Gregorius, I love watching some of these guys. I love Aaron Judge. Gregorius, sorry, I said his name wrong. I like watching a lot of these players because I like the way they play the game. I will never allow myself to say, oh, the underdog Yankees and then root for the underdog. No. Right. Astros all the way, baby. And that's because I love Altuve and Correa, and I just love that team. I like the way they're built. I think they're a fun organization. Plus, they're really a National League team, so it'd be fun to have two National League teams in the World Series because I'm a senior circuit guy. But it's the way the Yankees can flaunt 27 at you and be like, oh, 27. Yeah. But I'm never going to look at them and be like, oh, the underdog Yankees with their $300 million payroll. And
right.
Okay, fine. They have a good bullpen young players, but whatever.
That's another great example because the Yankees weren't very good for about 20 years, and then they hired Joe Torre, and everybody hated that hire, and then look what he ended up doing.
It's because the New York City's a National League team, but nobody wants to admit it. That's right, Sean Henry. I said it.
Wow.
All right. No, I've talked to him about it before. The city changes up there when the Mets are good. It doesn't change at all when the Yankees are good or bad.
Yeah.
It just stays New York. Anyway, all right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. Rafael Esperanza from MyBookie.net going to join us, and we'll talk a little point spreads, college and pro football, when we come back right here. Brandon Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game.